Chapter 20. The End. Einstein tried to make a good life for himself outside his beloved field. He sat for sculptors. He made friends with the saintly theologian Martin Buber, discovering a mutual pleasure in Ellery Queen detective stories. He invited the great singer Marian Anderson to stay at his home whenever she was in Princeton. If he was alone, he would improvise for long stretches on the piano. When his cat Tiger was depressed because it had to stay inside during a rainstorm, Einstein's secretary recorded him telling the cat, "I know what's wrong, dear fellow, but I don't know how to turn it off." Elsa died in 1936, and Mileva Maric, whom he hadn't seen in many years, in 1948, and each loss was a greater blow than he'd expected. Maric's death was especially tragic. She'd been making a decent life for herself in Zurich, supported by Einstein's money, tutoring students in the music and mathematics she'd always loved. But their youngest son, Edward, who'd remained in Switzerland, had been diagnosed with schizophrenia as a young adult. He was in and out of institutions. Generally peaceful and content to dreamily play the piano, one of the many similarities to his father that family friends remarked on, but he also experienced manic episodes in which he sometimes became violent. In one of those moments, Maric had been with Edward, and possibly during a struggle, had collapsed. 3 months later, she died in the hospital. Einstein's sister, Maya, had moved to Princeton just before the war, when her own marriage had fallen apart. The Winterler family that Einstein had stayed with for his remedial year of high school in Switzerland entered here once again. Their daughter Marie had been his first sweetheart. His friend Besso had married another daughter, and Maya had married one of the Winterler sons. In the hours he spent reading to Maya, Einstein sometimes turned to Don Quixote, but more often to Dostoevsky, whose works they both liked, especially the brothers Karamazov and its character's quest to understand a distant god. Although Ivan, one of the brothers in the book, thought it was impossible to know the creator, such questions are utterly inappropriate for a mind created with an idea of only three dimensions, Dostoevsky did not, and Einstein was fascinated by the author's conviction. When Maya died in 1951, Einstein sat on the back porch of his now empty home for hours on end. "I miss her more than can be imagined," he told his stepdaughter Margot when she came out to console him. He continued sitting there in the hot Princeton summer, at one point gesturing to the sky. "Look into nature," he whispered almost to himself. "Then you will understand it better." From special relativity, he knew that, from some perspectives in the universe, the moment of her death hadn't yet occurred. But he also knew that those locations were ones he could never access. Age was pressing in. In 1952, young players from the Juilliard String Quartet came to visit Einstein in his home, playing for him pieces by Beethoven, Bartok, and one of his favourite composers, Mozart. When he was cajoled to join in, he suggested Mozart's string quintet in G minor, and they played together. His hands were stiff and out of practice, but it was a piece he knew well. One of the players remembered, "Einstein hardly referred to the notes on the musical score. His coordination, sense of pitch, and concentration were awesome." Doubts were creeping in, too, darkness seeping into the corners of the great thinker's fabled inner vision. At times he was unsure that his efforts with a unified field theory would work. Once he wrote that he felt as if he were in an airship in which one can cruise around in the clouds but cannot see clearly how one can return to reality, i.e. Earth. Another time he admitted to a favourite mathematics assistant that although he could come up with fresh ideas as well as ever, he sometimes worried that his judgment about which were worth pursuing was fading. More often, though, he would tell others with a shrug that he was convinced that in the future, findings in science would catch up with his theoretical work, just as had often happened in the past. Isaac Newton, after all, had disregarded his own qualms about gravity acting instantaneously, and as a result, missed out on the breakthrough that Einstein himself had achieved in 1915. The Lambda events had shown Einstein the value of holding out for what he was convinced was right. And now, though quantum theory described certain events accurately, he held out hope that it too might be just an intermediate step toward a far greater physics that would be discovered in the future. Early in 1955, his longest-standing friend, the gentle Michele Besso, died. It had been more than half a century before that Einstein had told Marich, "I like him a great deal because of his sharp mind and his simplicity. I also like Anna, and especially their little kid." Now that little boy, Vero, was close to 60 himself. Einstein wrote him and Michele's sister about Michele, explaining how much he had loved and admired him, and adding, "The foundation of our friendship was laid in our student years in Zurich, where we met regularly at musical evenings. Later, the patent office brought us together. The conversations during our mutual way home were of unforgettable charm." This is when he added the remark we've heard before. "Now he has preceded me briefly in his departure from this strange world. This means nothing. For those of us who believe in physics, the distinction between past, present, and future is only an illusion, however tenacious this illusion may be." By that time, Einstein was 75 years old and ill himself, with one of the large arteries from his heart swelling in an aneurysm that doctors explained was going to burst at some unexpected time. There was the possibility of an operation, but medical science was still poor in this area, and there was no guarantee the procedure, if Einstein even survived it, would cure him. Rather than risk an operation, Einstein decided to continue with his work on the unified field theory, as well as on public statements warning that unfettered nuclear weaponry could destroy all human life on Earth. He tried to be stoic. "To think with fear of the end of one's life is pretty general with human beings," he admitted. "The fear is stupid, but it cannot be helped." He was anxious about his condition, and no doubt wondered whether science would justify his isolated labours after all. In early April 1955, Einstein's heart condition worsened. His doctors explained that the aneurysm was tearing. The process would be slow at first, then suddenly speed up. There was more talk of an operation, but Einstein was adamant. "It is tasteless to prolong life artificially. I have done my share." Einstein did ask them what he would experience, how horrible the pain would be, but they couldn't tell him anything for sure. An injection of morphine helped slightly. By Friday, April the 15th, he was in such pain that he was driven to Princeton Hospital. When his stepdaughter Margot came, she barely recognized him. Pale, his face twisted in pain. Even so, his personality was the same as ever, she remembered. He joked with me and awaited his end as an imminent natural phenomenon. His older son flew in from Berkeley, where he now worked as an engineering professor. Speaking to Hans Albert, Einstein gestured to his equations, which were yet another effort at creating a unified field theory to bring together all known forces in a clear, predictable manner. He said, wryly, "If only I had more mathematics." Soon he felt a little better, and even asked for his glasses, as well as a pencil and his papers, to work on those calculations some more. But then, in the early morning of Monday, April the 18th, the aneurysm burst. He was alone, bleeding to death very quickly. He called out to a nurse, and when she arrived, he whispered to her. But she spoke no German, and so had no idea what the old man said before he died.